CheersCast is part of the Fire & Water Podcast Network.
Can I help you guys?
Yeah, you could help us out with a couple of beers.
Sure. That'll be $5.
No. We can't have our boys in the trenches paying for this. No, much better they spend their valuable time finishing their work upstairs than digging around in their wallets for exact change.
Now, here's a man who understands the construction business.
What are you doing?
What am I doing? I'm greasing the construction workers.
Ooh, that'd make a great title for my autobiography.
You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to CheersCast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me this time is regular guest and one of the Fire & Water Network All-Stars. Please welcome back, Siskoid. What's up?
It's early in the morning for a beer, but, you know, that's how the show works.
I mean, they're there before noon. They actually point that out in one of the first lines of dialogue in this episode.
Yeah, but Cheers beer, it can't be that strong. I mean, it's every mug has at least 50% foam. Yeah. So it's not a full pint. And I mean,
they need the visual. They need to establish the visual that that's a beer. And, you know, a full head of foam for some reason says beer more readily. Yeah. I mean,
but earlier this season, we saw the rival bar. And their beers are even worse.
Yeah.
It's like 75% foam in these like flute-like glasses. I was like, okay. Yeah, that's why you go to Cheers.
Well, he was giving away free beers to Norm and Cliff, so I think, you know, he's like, all right, you're only getting a little bit.
You're only getting the bottom of the keg, yeah.
Anyway, folks, we are up to the fifth episode of season 9, Ma Always Liked You Best. This one written by Dan O'Shannon and Tom Anderson, directed by Andy Ackerman, another one of his. The original air date was Thursday, October 18th, 1990. A construction job outside the bar is adversely affecting Cheers' business, and when Rebecca refuses to bribe the workers, they draw the job out even longer. Sam, Rebecca, and Norm decide to take out one of the windows in the pool room to create a new entrance. When Norm tries to demonstrate that the entry is large enough, he gets wedged in, drawing allusions to Winnie the Pooh stuck in Rabbit's Hole. Meanwhile, Cliff's mom, Esther Claven, is in town, hoping to move back in with Cliff, but Cliff shuts her down to prove his independence. Woody invites Ma Claven to stay with him. She accepts and begins to treat Woody like her son to punish Cliff. Cliff's insistence that he is happy to have Ma out of his life is tested and fails utterly. He wants Ma back in his life, but by now she's moved on to Woody. The guys almost come to blows over who gets to keep Esther until she agrees to share her love with both of them. All right, buddy, what'd you think of this one?
Well, that actually a great reappearance by Ma Claven. Mm-hmm. I think she does really well here. It's got a lot of little subplots. We're very much in the true sitcom era of Cheers where, yeah, you know, we're drawing comedy from an A plot, a B plot, maybe even a C plot in there, but still kind of continuing their stories. You know, it's Rebecca's very early as manager under Sam and the new structure, right. and they bring this up, and so I think it was a fun one. It's one of those very much based on the guest star's power.
I think throughout the first good two-thirds of the series, I think the general consensus was Cliff-centric episodes could be hit or miss, but usually when his mom was there, that elevated the substance. For anybody like who doesn't remember, Cliff's mom is played by Frances Sternhagen. I've done her IMDb credits before, but this is her third of 7 total appearances in the show. I think she has 2 in season 10 and 2 more in season 11.
So she really is back in Boston.
Yeah. She'll be a permanent resident for a while in terms of being in his life. Yeah.
Cool.
But I also think I was trying to remember, I don't think we've had a Cliff and Woody episode in the show. It's kind of like, and even though they don't have a lot of pairing because they're mostly like interacting with her and it's the contrast of how they interact with her. But like by the end of it, when they're kind of having their own little thing in the last scene, I was like, that was interesting. I don't know that we've had like a scene really about those two guys together.
No, because this one highlights how they're both the children of the show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
in different ways. They're both infantilized. Yeah. And and we don't like when there's just them there and there's no parent figure, no actual parent figure. You could say Rebecca or Frasier right. are parent figures, but they're more like part of the gang. When you have this outside parent figure, it highlights this. Because normally, I think Woody would defer to Cliff. Mm-hmm. Cliff is the guy with all the knowledge. He's, oh,
right, Woody. Right. He respects him, yeah.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting in this. We sort of find out that the whole trivia, I don't know if this was brought up before, but the whole insane trivia kind of comes from the mom. And I was thinking, well, maybe... Like she teaches things to Woody, which are just as insane as the things that that Cliff comes up with. So at first I was thinking, well, is Cliff, you know, the very beginning of the joke? Okay, well, is Cliff just mangling all the knowledge that he got from his mom? They're interested in Jeopardy. They're interested in trivia, but is he mangling it at the bar? But no, because. Right. Woody starts on the insane trivia, about larks and suicidal larks, and Cliff finishes the sentence at the same time. So this is part of the right. trivia package. So it has to come from Esther.
Yeah, and she shows Woody the international sign for choking. I'm like, that's not the international sign
that
for
probably
choking.
Is
if
not.
There is such a thing, that's not how you signal somebody that you're
well,
choking.
Even if it were, I mean, if it is, let's say it is, it's like, we don't know it, right? We didn't recognize it, so right. how international can it be? Or how useful would it be?
Right.
I don't know what the international... signal for choking is.
Yeah.
So if somebody's choking and using a signal,
right.
You know, usually it's they stand up, they're blue in the face, they're pumping their chest. Like we understand, we've seen enough television and movies to know what that would look like and imitate it. But that is not it. What she's doing is not it.
Yeah, I'm not thinking right now. They definitely have alluded to, if not out explicitly stated, that she's the one who's been driving the trivia knowledge in him before in one of her earlier appearances and in a subsequent one, I think next season, maybe season 11, she starts schooling another friend of Cliff's, a girlfriend character in trivia. So yeah, that'll be interesting. The teaser for this one though, Woody and Norm are playing cards, but they're playing with tarot cards, and Norm puts one down and Woody is like, ooh, that's a bad card. That's ominous. I wouldn't want to be in your shoes, as if he's doing some kind of reading. And Carla comes upon this and really objects. She's like, you don't understand the awesome power you're meddling with. And Cliff is like, oh yeah, tarot. So ancient and mysterious that no one knows its history. Not even me.
No trivia. No. Yeah. We do know the origins of tarot decks. I mean, the modern tarot deck that we know is you know from the Renaissance, and of course has like origins and older things. But I every time you invite me on the show, I always play a kind of game because I think the very first was it the first one? It had like a Shakespeare element. And maybe that was like the first one. So ever since I've played this game, it's like, well, let's watch this episode because I never ask for an episode. You know, I'm watching them as Cheers cast goes. So I don't have like necessarily, oh, I got to do that one. I haven't seen it yet or have not re-seen it yet since I was a kid. So in this case, was this it? Was this the tarot deck element? Because I've been a tarot reader. I've talked about this kind of stuff before. Was this my invitation?
I didn't even remember the teaser when I gave you this one. I just thought I wanted something that I didn't think we had talked about before. So I thought of like the Cliff angle of this one and the whole Cliff and Woody semi sort of rivalry and the inclusion of his mom character. I just thought that was an element of the show that you and I had discussed previously.
Because obviously this teaser could fit in front of any episode, right? There's no real link.
Yeah.
Except there is. So I feel that maybe it's accidental, but I have ample knowledge about tarot cards, enough to dissect anytime I see it, you know, on TV or in movies. I'm always going, oh, do they know what they're doing? Are they putting cards down that make sense of the moment or what they're actually saying, etc. So you know it's bogus anytime somebody in a movie pulls out the death card and says and you know implies death.
Right.
Yeah, it's about change and
it
doesn't mean that. So it's that's one of the things you look for. Now in this case, what the card, obviously they're playing, the joke is that they're playing Go Fish. Mm-hmm. They're just playing a normal card game with a tarot deck, which you could technically do because the minor arcana are all basically were turned into the cards that we usually play with.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference, and this is kind of the insane one, is that there are four face cards in each suit in the tarot deck. So that they've got like an extra character. And the extra character is the knight, because I think the jacks are really the page of the tarot deck.
All right.
The page became the jack, maybe, and then queens and kings. Mm-hmm. But the knight is outside the 52 card deck that we know. The here he highlights the Knight of Pentacles. So that means, okay, well, I guess you could play with an extra face card. There's just like 14 cards in a suit instead of 13.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You could do that. As long as you didn't use the major arcana, because what are you going to do with those cards, right?
Right.
They're all unique and outside any kind of the scheme, especially for Go Fish, right? But no, they are using the major arcana. I see the hermit there. I see the lover. The lovers on top of the world are in the middle for, you know, okay. In a very...
I wasn't even looking that closely at the cards, but okay, clearly you were. This is why I brought you.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the show, right? The lovers on top of the world. What is this world about? And the lovers, and it's always been, you know, the Sam and Diane, the Sam and Rebecca.
Right.
So that's acknowledged in the middle of the table, of the counter. And then there's the hermit kind of on the side of Woody. So maybe like all these outsiders who are not part of that, the lover's scheme or whatever. You could say things like that, right? But he drops down the Knight of Pentacles. And this is where I think it actually relates to the rest of the episode, maybe accidentally, because the pentacles are the material world. The knights are crusaders. What this means in the tarot deck is that they are basically that when you get that card, it's talking about lost causes. He's kind of like the patron saint of lost causes in a way.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Lost causes. Okay, well, you know, whether that's Cliff trying to ingratiate himself with his mother, or he as a character is a lost cause. The whole idea of, well, we can't, like, we want to make the entrance, we want to open the entrance to Cheers again.
That was the first thing I thought of, yeah.
Is a lost cause. Then trying to create a back entrance becomes a lost cause. So it's all about lost causes.
Trying to bribe the cops at the end.
it's all a lost cause, right? So, you know, Rebecca trying to work into this in this world of bribery, it's all lost causes. And you might say, well, you know, comedy is kind of built on lost causes, and so they're just normal. But
I mean, thematically, yeah, you could say that about the bar itself.
Is a lost
kind of
cause.
A patron of lost causes.
Yeah, all the lost causes come and drink here, you know.
Well, you know.
Well, and that's, it's, I don't know. So maybe if you put this teaser in front of any other episode, it would still work because the comedy is kind of built on those kinds
of... The joke is that they're using the tarot cards, this ominous symbol, just to play Go Fish. Because Norm was like, do you have any Grim Reapers?
You're right. And then there's only one, right?
So right.
That's like, it's like, how do you play Go Fish with, by calling out, you know, very singular cards like that, as if there were many. So, yes, it's absurd. And, you know, the way they do it is actually absurd. But... the when using the Knight of Pentacles as the one card that you do mention is, if you want to use that Grim Reaper reference, which is supposed to be about the death card, the 13th major arcana, then you could say, okay, well, that's what Norm asks for.
Right.
And he's going to be the one pushing for the change, the new entrance. And he's going to be hoisted on his own petard and kind of fail at that and be stuck there. And it's like the change, but also he's asking for death. He's asking, because at the end of that, where at the very end of the episode, there's like rats coming up at him. He's so afraid that he actually calls out for Vera. So to me, that was like, okay, then like now the joke's over. Mm-hmm. And if you ended the show on this note, like forever, and like, Norm is dead. And so that card becomes some sort of foreshadowing. I'm sure it's accidental. I can't imagine that this teaser was written with the episode in mind, or maybe they had the idea. It was, and then they fleshed it out and connected it to the episode very smartly, if that's what happened. But I like to look at things and see more than there is, you know, the product, the art at the end is open to interpretation. And to me, because I know what the cards mean, it just added a layer.
given the show, I would assume that if that was intentional, they would have come back to it overtly. They would have said something about the tarot reading, or like Carla would have teased Norm about messing with the spirit world at some point, and that this was his comeuppance. Like, I think it would have been more overt in the way they set it up, but
because they do a lot of callbacks in this episode to other things. So I agree, you're right. It's you know, it would have fit very well with one of those Carla superstition episodes, which there are many.
But the accidental connection and the way that plays out thematically, I think that's amazing. And I knew nothing about that, so I'm glad that you brought that. It is fortuitous that I had you on this particular episode, even though that was never on my radar. Before one more tarot related question before we move on to the rest of the episode. With your experience, how accurate would you say a tarot reading is done over the phone?
It could be. To my mind, there's no supernatural element to this.
Sure.
It's harder to sell on a phone to me, because the way it does work, the way I feel it does work, is that, and this is what I told people, I no longer do it because it became really annoying. People would ask me to do it all the time, and it became too much. But the whole idea is that psychologically it works, because the symbols, you describe the symbols, and I was always upfront about this and saying there's no supernatural element. You put the cards in this order by shuffling and perhaps subconsciously place them in the right order. We are all tapped into these symbols. Obviously, it's all showmanship, because I don't really believe that your hands are just putting the cards in the right order and then somehow... Right. Especially since you haven't seen the symbols, you haven't looked through the deck. But those symbols, once described, tap into something, right? So psychologically, it does work, because as I describe symbols and themes, and you will place yourself in that. You will be the one who is making the connections in your mind.
Okay.
And so over the phone, that would still work. But then how would I, in the showmanship part of it, how would you explain those cards are in that order that I somehow shuffled it to speak to you? Right. So it's better when the person has handled the deck, because then you could say you manipulated the cards. This is your drawing rather than me doing it. But since Carla believes in all this stuff, then she can believe in a supernatural agency that somehow she affected the deck remotely. I wouldn't try to sell that to people.
I only asked the question because my one and only tarot reading, me being on the receiving end of it, was done over the phone. It was like back in eighth grade. A girl that I was sort of flirting with, and I probably should have picked up on more signals. She wanted to do a tarot reading with me over the phone when we were just talking. And I was like, okay. And the only thing I really remember from the reading, and again, I was like, I think even back then I was like, I don't know if this really works just over the phone. I think I have to be there to touch the deck. The only thing I've taken from that was, like, she said something, I don't know how she phrased it, something about like, my fate would be surprising or unexpected. And somehow I've interpreted that as like, I will not see my death coming. However I end up dying in this life, it will be a shock to me, or my back will be turned or something like that. So I'm like, all right, well then I don't have to live in fear of anything, because however I end up dying, I'm not going to see it coming. So,
yeah, I wouldn't put any trust in anything that describes the future too specifically.
Yeah,
because like the past, you can make connections to your own past, the present, you can make connections to your own present. The future, you can be aspirational, you can be scared or whatever, but you can't actually say what's going to happen. So I would mistrust any fortune teller who would, describe or announce future love affairs or illnesses or
specific fates.
That would make any sense to me. So, but you see, like, Carla's very superstitious in this moment, right?
Sure,
like,
yeah.
They're meddling. And there are so many superstitions around, like, you can't use somebody else's deck to read the tarot. There's all sorts of things like that have been related to me, because I'm not a believer. So it's not like, don't touch my deck. I've talked about this on other shows on the network before, but I'm such a non-believer that I can stop a Ouija board from moving, by touching it. and you just like touch the corner of it while people are doing Ouija, and it just stops the shooter glass from, you know, the shot glass from moving. So it's, you know, so obviously I don't, you know, don't at me, people. I don't believe in this stuff, but I do understand how it works as a psychological tool, as a sort of a tool to explore yourself through imagery. You know, it's like tapping into what, you know, people come to their own realizations about themselves, because we're going at it from a different angle, you know, from a more artful angle. So sometimes that works on people. I was quite a popular reader in my day. I've even had people pay for it. So
wow, amazing. All right, let's move on from the tarot set. When we get to the episode proper after the main titles, we just hear the sound of Jack hammering outside so loud that Carla can't hear Norm asking for a refill. The construction jackhammering right in front of the door, they finally stop. So Sam is like, oh, it must be their noon break or lunch break or something like that at noon. And Frazier's like, checks his watch. He's like, I've only got 10 minutes still. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's union time. Rebecca complains that the construction is messing with their business because no one can get inside the front door. I mean, obviously implying, I guess, the guys have already been there for however long before the construction started. Sam mentions that, you know, the foreman assured him that it's only a one-day job. And then we get this little exchange between Norm and one of our other barflies, Paul, who I mentioned, I think, in just the previous episode. The character Paul Crapins, played by Paul Wilson, has had a few other appearances sprinkled throughout the series. But from like this point on, like right around this chunk of episodes, he will be a regular fixture. Like, I think he's in a third or a half of all the episodes in the next three seasons. He just kind of becomes like the third barfly, who's kind of always just like half a step behind Norm and Cliff. So I think that's set up with this little scene when he and Norm is like, what are they doing outside? Someone should, you know, go and ask them what the construction job is about. And like, it's all the way up those stairs, you know. Well, maybe we should call somebody to see if they can find out. And the phone's way, you know, down the hall. We don't want to, like, all right, we'll turn on the television. The remote control is way in the pool room. And they just, it's like, I guess we'll never find out what it is. And Frazier points out about how lazy they are. And, you know, he's going to take it upon himself. He decides that he will find out what the job is. And he walks up those stairs. And interestingly, Carla reveals that she was almost deliberately hiding a sign that says danger, open trench. And then we just hear Frazier screaming and falling into something.
The lazy bit. Yeah. You know, they're too lazy to go and help him after that. check up on it. They're just too lazy. That's a pretty clever, there's a pretty clever callback to that, because when Norm, you know, puts out the window, takes off a bar, there's like no way, that's not an entrance yet. Right. And and he, you know, at that point,
he says he's perfected the art of like working, doing the least amount of work to get a job done. Yeah,
exactly. So they're, you know, prefiguring that moment with this bit, which is just like a, you know, a comedy bit, you know, like the rule of three, or it even goes to four or five here. And then, but then later, that's exactly the attitude that gets him into trouble. So I thought that was like some clever writing.
Yeah. I didn't like the whole thing with the sign, with Carla hiding the sign or like revealing to it, like she was concealing deliberately. Because I think, I kind of think like we needed the sign to kind of to tell the audience what was going on, but Frazier does that for us in the next scene, or like the next moment, like when he comes back in and he's covered in dirt and obviously disheveled, and they're like, what are they doing? He's like, as near as I can tell, they're building a 6 feet, they're replacing the top step with a 6 feet hole. And they keep like mentioning the hole. So, okay, we know there's a trench. We didn't need that sign. And the sign just kind of like puts a bizarrely, well, I shouldn't say necessarily bizarrely, but a malicious intent to Carla, which I don't think it was necessary in this moment. I think because a lot of the joke is about just how dumb Frazier was and how like buffoonish he was to just fall into this big open hole. They make the joke about that. But with Carla's involvement, it's like, okay, she sabotaged him, and that's a little bit different.
Because yes, she's harming potentially, like it's supposed to be a prank on the workers, but it's potentially, and actually does, harm the customers.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's like, and then, I don't know, maybe it takes away from, you're right, it takes away from the punchline. Like the punchline is, there was a 6-foot hole over there. But if you already know from the sign that there's a hazard, he kind of sells it before it happens. So, I agree with that. I think the whole, once Frasier falls into the hole, I think he eventually sells it. I'm a big boob. Yeah. I'm a big, you know, it's like he keeps being reminded. We call ourselves hapless victims. You know, it's like he's defending. He becomes defensive for the rest of the episode, which is fun. And obviously, this is an actor and a character that can sell that kind of humor. But like Woody laughing at it and thinking it's a joke, and like the more he complains, the more Woody thinks it's funny.
I could have broken my neck. Stop it, Dr. Crane, you're killing
me. I think that's like the weakest part of the episode. We've seen Woody do stuff like that before, like really take like understand something completely wrong. But in this case, I felt like, okay, this is then the lull in terms of the lulls.
I agree. What I think sort of redeems it or lifts that up just a little bit is in the next moment, the two of the construction workers come in and they recognize Frasier. It's like, hey, that's the guy who took the header into their ditch. And Woody is like, stop it. He's got this whole routine. Don't even get him started. Like continuing this idea that he thinks it's a joke. So I thought that was a nice little save for it.
I think they did that all the way through, right? It's like, this doesn't quite work, but the more they keep going with it, it eventually does work. And just like Frasier's reactions to this over time, it's like, it makes the moment useful. They do say a header. So yes, he might've broken. It's like, it didn't fall feet first.
Right. Right.
So that seems very dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. The two construction workers, the characters are credited as Jeff and Lars. Jeff is played by Rocky LaPorta. This is his first credit on IMDb, and he doesn't get another one until 2006, and he's had a few since then. So interesting that he hasn't had any credited movies or TV work, but I know he was a stand-up comedian, and that's part of his credit. I've always thought he was familiar. I always assumed he was somebody else that I just wasn't connected to the name. But when I watched it, there's something about his voice or his cadence that reminds me of the actor Kevin Pollak.
Sure, yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Like, there was probably once upon a time where I watched the episode and thought, I was like, oh, that must be an early Kevin Pollak appearance or something. Not a different guy. Lars, the other construction worker, is played by John Posey. His first role was actually in the movie Manhunter, which is based on the Thomas Harris novel Red Dragon, the first appearance of Hannibal Lecter. He's got lots and lots of movies and TV. One thing that I thought was interesting that might be, you know, of interest to some of our listeners in the Fire and Water community, he was in Avengers Endgame, but he's credited as Alexander Pierce Reader. So I think he was just the guy on set for when Robert Redford wasn't there on set. He was the guy basically reading the lines and acting that part for the rest of the cast when they were giving their lines in that little scene, the flashback to the Battle of New York when they see the Alexander Pierce character. And I was like, I'm sure Robert Redford wasn't on set for a week, you know, for his, you know, two or three lines of dialogue.
That's an insane credit.
Yeah. I just thought that was weird. So the two construction guys, they order a couple of beers and they're like, oh yeah, that'll be $5. And Sam kind of steps in. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, we can't have the guys in the trenches, you know, digging around for their wallets when they should be digging that hole. It's like, let's, you know, these beers are on the house. And Rebecca objects to them. She's like, what are you doing giving them free beers? And Sam goes, I'm greasing the construction workers. And Carla, this might be my home run. Carla's like, ooh, that would be a great title for my autobiography. Greasing the construction. And Rebecca objects to this on like moral grounds. She's like, you can't do that. It's like, what happened to an honest day's work for an honest day's wages? And the whole group laughs. Even Frasier, he's like, that's funny. And Woody's like, but it's not as good as your, you know, falling and breaking your neck joke. Norm is like, Rebecca, everybody knows if you pay somebody more, if you incentivize them more, they'll work faster. And at the same time, Cliff just kind of happens to be opening up his mail. And he's like, hey, I'm getting a raise from the post office. And Norm's like, well, that's the exception that proves the rule.
There's a couple of digs at his job in this episode. Yeah.
So Rebecca, she walks over to the construction workers. She's like, I'm sorry, I'm the manager here. And I like that you brought that up, like this tension, because we have seen Rebecca come back to the bar as this new manager role, but it's like, okay, how is it really different from the status quo beforehand? Like, okay, we know Sam is the owner, but what is the nature of their working relationship? And I like this kind of establishment where it's not really like an adversarial thing, but they are butting heads in this kind of moment. They have two different philosophies of this. And she's like, no, this is my job. I'm going to take myself seriously in this case. I'm supposed to make sure that we are making money and staying, you know, are keeping up our books. So we have to charge the customers for their beers. And that constructor was like, hey, you know, we totally understand. The woman take it's all about pride in your work. We get it. And you have inspired us. We're going to take pride in we're our construction job, no matter how long it takes. And I was like, okay, that is the key line. And I'm not sure if they really emphasized it as much, because certainly Rebecca doesn't pick up on it, but you kind of get the impression Sam knows what's going to happen. Cut to on the other side of the bar. Cliff is getting off the phone. He says, Ma is back in town. She's at the airport, and they're like, you're going to pick her up? He's like, no, that's exactly what she wants. And he doesn't want to have to be like catering to her every whim. And he's like, she's not going to be running my life the way she was when I was in my 30s.
I like that.
And he's happy to take, he's like, I'm happy to see her, to take her to dinner, give her a perm. He's like, but that's it. That's where I draw the line. And Woody's like, I thought you liked your mom. And they're like, oh, you like too much, a whole lot. And she's like, too much to be healthy.
Right. And the psychiatrist has weighed in. Right. I think the audience was already on board with that one.
Yeah. They point at Rebecca, notices that the construction guys went back out there, but they haven't started jackhammering again. And Sam's like, yeah, because they're pulling a slowdown. They're not actually stopping the job. They're not quitting or refusing to work. They're just going about it. It's like it's the slow protest, you know, instead of going on strike, essentially.
Right.
Sam tells Rebecca to go up there and bribe them. He gives her some money. He's like, tell them that they dropped this 50. No, actually, they each dropped a 50, and she's just returning it. And she's disgusted by this. She's like, well, he's like, well, then what are we going to do if people can't come into the bar? She's like, well, we'll just make another entrance. You know, like, we'll make one in the back room, in the back. And he's like, there's no way there's a door back there. And this is where Norm points out. He's like, hey, well, you know, the stained glass window, it's in a solid frame. It's about, you know, 4 feet by 8 feet or something like that. It's one thing. So you could just pop the window out with a crowbar without making a mess. It's like you could make an entrance back there if you just put some steps up to the window. So, and Sam was, you've been thinking about this a lot, haven't you? And Norm kind of like almost childlike. He's like, well, you know, it's always been my dream to retire and put up an apartment back there.
Yeah, even looking at their plans, when they actually do it, it's like, now you've removed the bars that are, you know, you're going to get robbed. there's no thought of putting a door there or anything. It's like it's going to be a hole in the wall.
Right.
Anything more would require a permit.
Right, exactly. Which they do not get, which comes back. So Ma comes into the bar and she is greeted by Cliff, as well as his friends. He's followed by Norm, Frazier, Paul, Pete, the other guy. And they're walking. And I love my claim is just like, my, hasn't everyone filled out nicely, calling attention to their weight? And I think Frazier's the only one who takes umbrage with this. He's like, hey, you know.
Well, she hasn't been there in a while, so every actor has kind of put on weight.
Right.
And then they've replaced barflies from her time with heavier barflies. So I really love that line, because it sort of sets up her attitude about everything. Like, she's right. Perfectly nice, but it's really, there's a passive aggressive vibe to the whole thing, and her relationship to Cliff and even Cliff's entourage.
Yeah. Frazier kind of asks Michael, Esther, he's like, I have to, how did you negotiate that, the big hole in the front door? And he's like, oh, I just hiked up my skirt and jumped across. There's no problem. And everybody's just kind of like laughing at Frazier a little bit more. And she's like, the construction workers told me some jackass fell in. Can you believe that? And that's when Frazier's like, yep, I'm a boob. I'm a big fat boob. And I can't call attention. Like, yep. He's like, not only is he buffoonish, but he's also put on way too many pounds sitting here in the stupid bar.
Right. And they're combining jokes together that way. It's like, really did. You're right. Like, if the tarot stuff had been written for this episode, it would have come back, because they keep making references, like the jokes all come back in some way, you know, within the body of the show.
Yeah. So why is Ma Cleven back in town? And she kind of tries to, you know, present this decently. She's like, you know how I've always been a fan of the historically rich sport of dog racing. Okay, does Ma Cleven have gambling debts? And she's like, yeah, she lost a lot of money and now she owes people. It's like, okay, she does. And she says that the dog she bet on had a parasitic condition and scooted the last 70 yards of the race, which is a visual that I just love.
It's like when I think of the episode, I was like, oh, well, she, you know, she ran out of money, basically. So she has to move because she lost her apartment or whatever. No. She owes people money. So we're talking like organized crime, and she's fled the state. She's just fled the state.
So she's more or less on the run. But like, there's something about her performance that's so delightful, just the way she can deliver those lines. And she says, she's like, yeah, so I'm back in town. I'm looking forward, Cliff, to seeing what you've done with your life and how we can fix it. And he's like, look, Ma, I don't need fixing. I've got this new lifestyle. She's like, is it a lifestyle or just an excuse to walk around with without your pants on? Cliff doesn't want her to move in with him. She doesn't want to be a burden. You know, not like Cliff was a burden when she was in labor with him for 72 hours. They're like, wow, that's incredible. And she's like, well, he had those wide hips. Like, okay, at that point, they do a C-section. You wouldn't be in labor for 3 days.
It was a long time ago.
She's like, oh, yeah, it's okay, I don't want to be burned. I'll just sleep on the street with the other forgotten mothers. That's like the way she can drop that. And Woody just happens to be bringing her drink, and he's like, well, you can stay with me. And she's like, it wouldn't be a burden. I'm like, no, you don't have a lifestyle that I would be cramping. He's like, I don't think so. And she's like, what's your name? Woody. Oh, that's the name of a boy whose mother raised him right. And Woody's like, really? Because I looked it up and all I could find was tree-like. And there's a great reaction shot of Norm and Fraser looking at each other like, oh, man, Woody.
He was looking for a roommate in an earlier episode, right?
True, he was, yes.
So they're continuing these little strands, you know? It's like now that his girlfriend is in Europe. Right. Right. He's, we need to give him something to do.
Right. She says she likes Woody. He's nice and thoughtful. And look at those narrow hips. She said he must have shot out like a bullet. The next day, we come back into later on. And now in the pool room, Norm has started to take out the window. But as you said, like he didn't pop the entire glass frame. I just took out like two of the bars. And he's like, now anyone can come in there. And actually, we don't see it back there. He's like, he's created the back entrance, and you just see two dogs racing through the barn, just barking, chasing something. And they're like, what the hell was that? And Norm was telling them, he's like, well, I think it was two dogs chasing a chihuahua. I hope it was a chihuahua. And Sam's announcing to the bar, if the health department asks, it was a chihuahua.
Yeah, we don't see it. Yeah, so it was too fast. I mean, it must have squeezed through that thin, like the door was open and it just like got through.
Right.
As the dogs raced by. You couldn't really have dogs chasing a rat.
Right. You couldn't stage that.
Yeah. No, not before a live studio audience.
Right. Then we have Ma and Woody. They come in together. She drove him to work, and she also made him lunch. And this is where she says she cut up the grapes in half, but just in case they get swallowed, he starts to choke. Do the international sign for choking, where she puts one hand by her neck and does her other hand as if she's like talking or gabbing. And I'm like, no, the choking sign is like you have both hands around your neck. Cliff is like, well, how come you never taught me the international sign for choking? And she's like, oh, you're trachea is so big, your gullet is so big, it would take a knot worse to block that.
Obviously, it's a dig at his talkativity, you know, talkativeness. But also, it's like she's very concerned in her cracks. She's very concerned with people's, or especially Cliff's, width.
Right, you know? Right.
Like his hips are too wide for childbirth, for her child Ruth anyway, his trachea is too wide to to ever get choked. The he's wider than she remembers. You know, that's fat joke at the beginning. So it's she has like a theme going.
Yeah. She tells Woody that she rented the rest of the Police Academy movies so they can finish their movie binge, apparently. And she talks about like the actor that what was his name? Michael Winslow, I think, was the guy.
Sounds familiar,
she,
yeah.
Yeah, she mentioned
the sound effects.
The African-American guy who makes all the sound effects, she said. And she's like, you can tell he's respectful of his mother. And Cliff's like, all right, Ma, how about you come to the apartment tonight and we watch Jeopardy? And she says, oh, praise God, I've been invited to Xanadu.
She has all the best lines. She really does. She has all the best lines in the episode.
Yeah, she does. Woody kind of like comes up and like kind of like whispers to her, and she's arguing. She's like, no, I don't. He's like, come on, you gotta do it. And then she's like, okay, no, Cliff, we would be delighted if you come watch Police Academy with us. And it's like she makes a big show that Woody had to beg her to ask him. And it's an imposition on her to invite him, you know, just really turning the guilt back on him. And he's like, no. He's like, I don't need your pity. I'm happy as a lark. And Woody's like, well, Mr. Clavin, I have to correct you. The lark is actually a very depressing bird. He's like, it has the highest suicide rate in the ornithological kingdom. And its song is more of, and Cliff cuts my face. He's like, it's more of a dirge. You've been teaching him bird trivia, haven't you, Ma?
Yeah, she's the source. It didn't come from nowhere, right?
Exactly. And he says that he's a graduate of the Esther Clavin School of Emotional Blackmail. And she makes a joke about his civil service job. And he's like, back off. And then she's like, I'm perfectly happy because Woody is like the son I never had. He's like, well, what about me? She's like, you're the son I did have.
Yeah. I love that line.
In the pool room, Norm is working on the entrance. Cliff is back there because this is sometime later. Cliff is trying to assure him that he's fine throwing Ma out, and he's doing one of those things where the more he's talking, you know, he's not trying to convince or reassure Norm because Norm doesn't care. He's not paying attention. He's trying to reassure himself. And Norm is like, yeah, just shut up and leave me alone. He's like, how can I get you to stop talking? And Cliff just keeps on going. He's like, Cliff, I've got a crowbar. Just please stop talking. And then Rebecca comes in. Cliff tries to tell her about how much. He's like, let's role play. You be Ma and I'll like kick you out of my life. And she's like, yeah, dude, go do it with Sam. And so he starts shouting down at Sam. And Sam's like, I'm busy, Cliff. I don't want to do this. Here's the point where Rebecca tells Norm, she's like, that hole isn't big enough. That like nobody can fit through that. That's not going to work as an entry. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, trust me, I know how to do the laziest amount of work to get something done. He's like, this will be fine. Anybody can get through that door. He's like, I'll prove it.
Yeah, even me.
And again, talking about like bringing back the theme
people's
of
people's wits.
Width and girth and everything like that. Norm starts to climb through the hole and he's like, all right, well, that's it. He's like, what's it? He's like, I'm stuck. It's like, and she tries to pull him out and it's not working. She's like, okay, I'll go get help. And she calls to Sam as she leaves, and he's like, well, you better help soon because that chihuahua is back. In fact, it's a whole pack of chihuahuas. I hope they're chihuahuas. And he starts to scream.
Yeah. I mean, they're all idiots because
yes, of course.
His arms have been through. So you go to the other, you go in the alley and you pull him out.
Right.
You can't pull him back in. You should twist. Obviously, it's a comedy bit, you know.
Right.
But there's, you know, at one point, I guess it's a little bit later when, you know, Carla brings him a beer at the window.
I love that. They're still giving him his beers, even though he's stuck in the window.
And at that moment, I thought, oh, well, they could use it as a kind of carrot. Like
a lubricant, I think it, or something. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in Norm world, you put a beer in, you say, oh, the beer is over here on the
motivate
on the pool table.
Yeah, he'll
and he comes out, right? He comes right out, right? It's like superpowers just to get to the beer.
Right.
But no, we need to keep this going, you know, for the cops and et cetera. There's more to come on this.
Right. And Fraser comes in. He's like, is that Norm? I didn't recognize you without the bar stool attached. And then here's where they start to compare Norm to Winnie the Pooh that's stuck in a rabbit's hole after eating too much of the honey. And he's like, well, what did they do? They just starved him for a couple of weeks and then he, you know, was able to slip out. Norm was like, well, when he got out, did he Winnie the Pooh sue the damn rabbit? I'm not sure Norm would have a case in this instance.
No, this
is pretty much his own doing. Back in the bar, Cliff is still talking about Ma to anybody nearby, including Paul and Pete. And they're like,
he's going to have to raise himself.
Right. He's going to have to raise himself. Yeah. And well, the hard part is done. It's like, yeah, you're 40 years old or more. And Pete's like, is he talking about girl trouble? And Paul's like, kind of.
I know.
Woody and Ma come back in after shopping for shelf paper.
Oh, my God.
And she just kind of offhandedly refers to, like, calls him son as kind of like a term of endearment. Cliff takes offense to this. And he thinks that, you know, he wants to thank Woody for taking care of her. But, you know, there's one thing that his sense of pride won't allow him to say to Ma. But he knows he can tell Woody because Woody will understand. And then Cliff just starts to cry. Like, I want my mommy back. Like, he can't do that in front of his mom. And Woody just like resorted. He's like, you can't have her. You gave her to me. He's like, oh, well, I miss her. He's like, but if I give her up, then I'll miss her too. Can't we share? I don't want to share. And just like the pitiful children thing. And Frasier has to step in this because, yeah, this is the point where they're acting like little babies. And he's like, stop this. You're like, we have to settle this like rational adults. So how does the psychiatrist think rational adults will settle this? Well, Woody, Cliff is, you know, Ma's biological son, so logic would dictate that Cliff gets first dibs.
Yeah.
Thank you for weighing in, Frasier. Your PhD really came in helpful there, or your MD even. Ma comes out, and she's going to leave with Woody, and he's kind of acting sheepish, and she's like, what's wrong with it? And then he starts to bawl, like, and just talk about Cliff, but he's like, he's so incomprehensible, you can't even understand him, but she is somehow able to. She's like, Cliff, is that true? Yeah, Ma, I want you back. This one, like, they're almost fighting. He's like, is there enough room in my life? He's like, Cliff is like, I'll make room on your face to Woody or something like that. They're like ready to like throw blows and stuff. Yeah. And
she compares it to Cain and Abel.
Yeah. She's like, not a Cain and Abel situation. She's like, there's room in my life for both of you. And certainly I have enough shelf paper too. And she's like, we'll do both of your apartments. And then the boys start competing. It's like, who's going to get their apartment redone first? And as they're running out together, kind of like almost like competing, slap fighting with each other. And she has to shout out the warning, be careful of the hole. And you just hear both of them scream and fall in. She's like, yep, right. They're my boys. Both dumb as dishwater.
Right. She loves both for different reasons.
Right.
Woody for actually real reasons. And then I love what she says about Cliff, you know, because I'm your biological mother and the nature dictates that there'd be a bond. And Cliff is happy with that, right? It's
for him. The last little bit, and we have to go back a little bit earlier. I skipped over it. The two police officers come in and the cops just credited as policeman one and policeman two. The taller one played by Ken Foree, he was in Dawn of the Dead, lots of other horror movies and shows. I wondered if you recognized him.
Horror icon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The other one, James F. Dean, I didn't have any noticeable credit that I really remembered or recognized from him. But they come in earlier and they're like, where's the child stuck in the fence? And Sam is like, it's back here in the room. And he kind of turns to Rebecca. He's like, child stuck in a fence? What did you tell them? She's like, well, anytime I said accountant stuck in the window, they just laughed and hung up. They go back there. And then after the whole thing with the kids, Cliff and Woody, I remember the kids, after they fall in the trench, we get the cops walking out. They're like, all right, well, we can get that guy out of there, but it's going to take the jaws of life. And they kind of point back, again, another callback. They're like, it reminds me of Winnie the Pooh stuck in the hole. It's like, oh, yeah. How did this guy get stuck back there? It's like, well, he ate all of Rabbit's honey. It's like, no, not Winnie the Pooh. Norm, this guy. And they're like, we were building this entrance. And they're like, did you have a permit for that? And now Rebecca is going to take Sam's advice and bribe the two cops to kind of get out of this offense. And they're not taking to it. Again, lost cause, trying to get them to dismiss. Like, are you offering us a bribe? He's like, what, is 50 not enough? He's 100. And they're like, all right, well, they take her away. And she's like, Sam, get my checkbook, as they walk her out. Right. And then while this is all happening, we go back into the pool room and Norm all alone. He's like, you guys are coming for me, right? Guys?
Yeah, at that point, the cops have completely forgotten about him.
Right, the cops have forgotten about him. Sam, Rebecca.
They made an arrest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If there's one thing Rebecca is not, it's streetwise.
Right. So yeah, it ends pitifully as it fades to black and we get the credits, just Norm calling out for Vera, somebody to save him. So, for this one, Norm had 6 beers, which brings him up to 856.
That's a good count for, you know, spending much of the episode trapped in the window.
Yeah. I think I know, but who was your employee of the week?
Well, it's got to be Mock Laban.
I was really close to that. I kind of had this thing where I thought Ma, Woody, and Cliff were so strong together, but also kind of competing for each other that they somewhat neutralized each other. So I'm actually going to give it to Norm, in part for the physicality of like just being stuck in the hole and everything. Like, even though we don't see his head for the half the episode. But some of his gags, I just thought I like Norm in this episode, so I'm giving him for that. But yeah, I easily could have given it to Ma Clavin or even Woody or Cliff. Frazier was strong for part of this episode, but yeah. It was a tough call. But
when I was looking at what I would give the home run to, it came down to like 6 or 7 lines from Ma. So
yeah,
so I had to give it to her. Great guest stars. Right.
What were some of your home runs? What were a few of them?
I think my top one is it's actually her opening line where she says that, everybody has, everybody's filled out nicely. I thought it was just very funny. And it's kind of a statement on where the show is now.
Right,
it's ninth season, right?
Yeah.
So that was my favorite, but I could have picked many. I think in terms of cleverness, you know, you're the son I did have, you know.
Yeah.
I think I've used a version of this, you know, like saying you're the something I never had. And it's like, but you do have that thing. So, well, you're the thing that I did have. Right. I think I've used that in the past and it probably came from here.
Yeah. It's close. I still like Carla when Sam says he's greasing the construction workers. And she's like, that could be the title of my autobiography. I think... I agree. It could go to almost any one of Ma Clavin's lines. I would also shout out Rebecca's last part where she called the cops that there was a child stuck in the fence. Like, why'd you say that? Anytime I said accountant stuck in the window, they just laughed and hung up. Oh, Siskoid, thank you once again for being on this episode of Cheers Cast. Until you're back again, where can the people find you if they want to hear more from you?
I'm here on the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Most Tuesdays doing shows about various things, we're doing a show together every 4 months. We're together on the FW Team Up talking about Marvel 2-in-1 and team ups with the Thing, Marvel's The Thing. Yep. I'll shout that out. But of course, you know, if you're listening to the network already, you're probably aware.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, and thanks to all of you who listen to CheersCast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. CheersCast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Clifford, I'm not trying to get you jealous. I don't have to. I found a wonderful companion in Woody. He's like the son I never had.
Well, what about me?
You're the son I did have.